Support for Science Questions is provided by USU's College of Science, advancing the educational experience of future scientists with advanced research in the lab, field, and outer space. When students and faculty learn together, discovery follows. Information is at usu.edu/science.
Welcome to Science Questions. This is Sherry Quinn.
The universe is so massive and so old, it's difficult to comprehend its enormous size and age. Scientists estimate that the universe was created 12 to 15 billion years ago in a single violent event known as the Big Bang. It was this event that evolved an extremely small, dense, and hot universe into this seemingly endless one. The great distances between the sun, stars, and planets in the solar system fascinated a very young boy, inspiring him to become a physicist. That small child grew up to be one of the most prominent and popular physicists of our time. Dr. Kip Thorne was born in Logan, Utah, where he was initially intrigued, gazing up into the sky. He received a BS degree from Caltech in 1962 and his PhD from Princeton University in 1965. Thorne has received numerous awards for his work and for his writings. He currently teaches theoretical physics at Caltech University.
So I grew up in Logan. When I was small, I thought the most glorious job in the world would be to be a snowplow driver, because in 1948 we had tremendous snows, and I remember the snow being piled up to a height that was three times higher than I was tall, and the snowplow being able to push that around was wonderful. And shortly thereafter, at age eight, I went to a lecture about astronomy, about the solar system, at the Fifth Ward Church in Logan by a professor from the university, and I fell in love with astronomy and decided I wanted to be an astronomer. Then a few years later, I read books by a man named George Gamow about relativity, decided I wanted to be a relativity theorist. So I'm a relativity theorist who works in astronomy. But all of that came from my childhood growing up in Logan. My mother, Alison Thorne, did projects with me. When I got fascinated by astronomy, she went out with me out to, in front of the house, and we drew a picture of the sun 4 feet in diameter on the corner sidewalk, and then started to scale, drawing the planets in the solar system and their distances from the sun. And when I discovered that Pluto was out in North Logan, the farthest planet from the sun, that was, I've never forgotten how big the stretches of interplanetary space are. To get from a 4-foot sun to Pluto in North Logan was quite a stretch.
What are your ideas about the origins of the universe?
We know that the universe began in a Big Bang explosion. It's not just that theory tells us this. There is very extensive observational evidence. You look out and you see distant galaxies moving away from the Earth. You look out and you see radiation, electromagnetic radiation, microwaves that they are, that were produced in the Big Bang, just filling the universe. So the challenge is to understand the details of the beginning of the Big Bang. What created the universe? What were the laws, the fundamental laws of physics that governed the creation of the universe? How were space and time born? How was matter born at the beginning of the universe? Are there other universes? Can new universes be created inside black holes? These kinds of questions are big questions for physics in the coming century, and they're questions for which we know that the answers will require understanding a set of fundamental laws of nature that we don't yet understand, laws called the laws of quantum gravity. These laws are a marriage or unification of two previously known sets of laws, the laws of warped space-time from Einstein and the laws of quantum physics, which govern atoms and molecules and lasers. We don't know how those laws get unified. We don't know what happens when you have some phenomenon like the birth of the universe where both kinds of laws must act simultaneously and together in a unified way. We don't know what how those laws behave under those circumstances. The quest to understand that is the quest then for quantum gravity, the quest for the laws of quantum gravity, is the key to the 21st century solution of the puzzle of how the universe was born and whether there may be other universes.
Can you talk a little bit about your research on black holes? And first, can you define what it means?
So a black hole is an object that is not made from matter like you or I or anything we've ever seen, but instead it's made from warped space and warped time. So that, for example, this object has a shape. It has a shape, something like a sphere or maybe a pumpkin. If you were to measure the circumference around it, and that circumference, if it came out to be something like 30 feet, then if you were to measure the diameter, the Euclid's laws of geometry say that the diameter should be 30 feet divided by pi. So that diameter should be approximately 10 feet. And if you were to go in and actually measure the diameter would be many, many miles. And so space is really warped, that the diameter is huge compared to the circumference. That just doesn't happen in ordinary space. Time is extremely warped around a black hole. When you go down near the black hole, time slows down. So time is moving very slowly down there compared to out far away. And if you go inside the black hole, time actually twists around and moves in a direction that you would have thought was a space direction. It moves toward the center of the black hole, is the direction of flow of time. So because you and I can only move forward in time, there's no way for us to move backward in time. We get dragged to the center of a black hole. A light beam can only move forward in time, so it gets dragged to the center of a black hole, which is why nothing can get out of a black hole, because the direction of the future of time inside the black hole is downward. Nothing can come up. So a black hole is an object made of warped space and warped time down which things can fall and out of which nothing can ever come.
What is your primary area of interest? What is it about our universe that you find the most fascinating?
Well, the challenge that I've been working on for the last 20 years is my primary challenge, is to develop the tools to be able to watch black holes collide, to develop the tools to be able to measure the warpage of space and time around a black hole, to be able to make maps of the curved space-time. And since the nearest black hole is very, very far away, we can't do that by bringing the black hole into the laboratory and making those measurements. The nearest black hole is probably 100 light years from Earth. So you'd get in a spaceship and the speed of light would take 100 years to get there and 100 years to get back. So we're not going to do this here. We have to do it by means of some kind of radiation that is produced by black holes that would carry encoded in itself detailed maps of the warped space and time around the black hole. Some sort of radiation that would be produced when two black holes collide, come crashing together, that would carry in itself a picture of that collision. Now, since black holes aren't made of matter, they can't produce electromagnetic waves, no radio waves, no light, no X-rays, no heat even. The only kind of radiation they can produce is radiation made of the same thing as they are made from, which is warped space and time. So what I've been involved in is developing new kinds of telescopes that look at not at light or X-rays or radio waves, but rather look at waves that are made from warped space and warped time, very, very weak waves that should be passing through the Earth and that were produced by things like colliding black holes in the distant universe. So it's an attempt, it's a project, it's a long-term project to convert this study of black holes from something that is pure theory, where we work with Einstein's equations and figure out what a black hole ought to be like, into something that is observation, so we can actually see what a black hole is really like.
How did we find out that black holes existed?
Black holes were predicted to exist by Einstein's fundamental laws of physics, his laws that govern the warped space and warped time. These laws are called the laws of general relativity. And a man named J. Robert Oppenheimer in 1939 used those laws, examined them, and saw that they predicted black holes. Oppenheimer went on a few years later to be the leader of the American effort to build the atomic bomb in the midst of World War II. Einstein himself, who formulated the laws, didn't believe Oppenheimer's predictions. And it was a mark of how hard it was to understand what the mathematics was saying when you manipulated Einstein's mathematics, that Einstein himself didn't understand what his mathematics was saying, but Oppenheimer actually did. So the black holes were predicted by Einstein's mathematical laws in 1939. We only began to develop good enough technology to see whether they exist or not astronomically in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And by now we know they exist because we see gas falling into them. Black holes very far from Earth, gas from interstellar space or gas from some companion star being torn off some companion star, falling toward a black hole, heats up and emits radiation, which we can see with optical and X-ray telescopes. And so we see the evidence that the black holes are there, but this gas does not bring us any kind of picture, no detailed picture of the space warpage and the time warpage around the black hole. So that's the challenge now, is to get those pictures, which we can only get through the new kind of radiation.
The things we can learn from studying these black holes, how will it improve our knowledge of the universe, and what kind of tangible things can you derive from it?
So the study of black holes, in large measure, it's simply our attempt to understand the universe around us. We live in a universe that is far more bizarre and rich than people ever imagined 20, 30, 40 years ago. And this is one feature of the universe, that there is a huge black hole at the center of our galaxy, our Milky Way galaxy. We now know that weighs about 3 million times what the Sun weighs, that material is all the time falling into, and this black hole is getting bigger as material falls into it. Fortunately, it'll never get big enough to swallow the Earth, but it grows. And so appreciating the nature of the universe around us is a big part of this. As a byproduct, of course, there's also that the technology that we build in order to be able to do these studies is technology that generally turns out to have an impact on everyday life later, some years later. For this project to build gravitational wave detectors, we call them, the detectors to see the ripples of warped space and time produced when black holes collide, this technology involves using laser beams to measure the motions of sapphire crystals in a high-precision instrument. We needed laser beams whose light color was absolutely pure. Laser beams that had whose frequency of oscillation of the light was extremely monochromatic, not changing with time. At the time that we embarked on this project, there were claims by physicists that it would be impossible to make a laser beam more stable in its frequency than a certain amount. And there were proofs, mathematical proofs in the literature, science literature, of this. So Ronald Drever, who is one of the co-founders of this so-called LIGO project that we are working on, gravitational wave project, Ron Drever, in fact, invented a new technique to stabilize lasers, make the laser light much more monochromatic, much more stable. He invented a new technique that underlies our project, but that now is widely used in modern technology when people want to get very stable light in a variety of different areas of modern technology. They use this technique that was invented on this project. So our efforts, in fact, have technological fallout payoff in a variety of different areas that will impact everyday life. But we ourselves are driven not by the desire to have that happen, but rather by the desire to understand the universe around us.
Do you find that, are there a lot of surprises, and do you feel like you're still going to find learn lots of new things?
Physics is continuing to move very rapidly with major new discoveries. Perhaps one of the most interesting ones is the discovery in the last several years that approximately 70% of all the mass in the universe is made not from the kind of matter you and I are made from, and not made from space-time warpage, but made from some weird kind of matter that has an enormous tension in it, like the tension in a rubber band that fills the universe. It's some exotic form of matter that fills the universe, and through this tension, almost paradoxically, it causes the expansion of the universe to increase its speed. The discovery of this is mind-boggling for physicists who thought they understood what the universe was made from, and now there's some new kind of something there in the universe that in fact is dominant. 70% of all the mass in the universe is in this new form that we just didn't know it existed before. And the struggle to understand just what it is one of the big struggles physicists and astronomers will have over the next decade or two. So discoveries like that completely change the way we think about pieces of physics are continuing to happen.
I have to ask about time travel. Do you think time travel is possible? And if so, when will that point be reached?
We do know quite certainly that it's possible, if you have good enough technology, to move forward in time more or less as fast as you want. So that you could get in a time machine now and after about 1 hour, as measured by you and your body, your physiological time, you could emerge and the rest of the universe would have aged by a million years. That's certainly possible. And we can even describe how to build time machines that would do that if we had the technology. We also know that the technology is so far beyond our current ability that it is not imaginable how long it will take for us to get that technology. It's not centuries, it's millennia until we'll have that technology. What we don't know is whether it's possible to travel backward in time. And my personal guess is that the fundamental laws of physics prevent us from traveling backward in time. Together with a student of mine, a postdoctoral student, I have found a mechanism that seems to be universal that would appear to make any time machine self-destruct at the moment you try to activate it. So you go in your time machine, you pull the handle, you're going to go backward in time, and the whole thing blows up and you're dead. And this mechanism seems to be universal. It appears that it may cause any time machine to self-destruct when you try to activate it, but we don't know for sure because the destruction is governed by these laws of quantum gravity that we don't yet have a mastery of. So that's another question that we can't answer for sure until we have these laws of quantum gravity in our hands. But my guess is then that if we had the technology to build time machines, you could happily get in a time machine and go forward a million years in a 1 hour of your time. But when you try to get back in and go back to where you came from, you couldn't do it.
Wormholes are prevalent in science fiction literature, movies, and television shows. But do they really exist? I asked Dr. Thorne to explain.
Wormholes are hypothetical objects that are made from warped space that enable you to go into one mouth of the wormhole here in this room in Salt Lake City and emerge from the other mouth the moment later, which might be in Los Angeles or might be on the other side of our galaxy. This wormhole mouths would be more or less spherical, like a black hole or like the Earth or like a crystal ball. And you would just go into this sphere through the surface of the crystal ball. It's not made of crystal. The wormhole is made of warped space. And you go through and find yourself in a tunnel that reaches from Salt Lake City to Los Angeles or to the other side of the galaxy. Wormholes are permitted by Einstein's laws of space-time warpage by themselves. But when you look at what those laws of space-time warpage say, they say that in order to hold a wormhole open so you can actually travel through it, you have to put into the throat of the wormhole, into the interior of the wormhole, you have to put in there a form of matter that is very different from the matter that we have here on Earth or any kind of matter we've ever encountered. It has to be a form of matter that has an enormous tension, a tension that is even bigger than the tension that we see in the matter that fills 70% of the universe, that makes up 70% of the mass of the universe. We don't know whether this super exotic matter can exist. The laws that govern whether it can exist are the laws of quantum physics. We have not yet mastered the laws of quantum physics well enough to know for sure whether this super exotic matter can exist. So until we know that, we can't know whether a wormhole can be held open long enough for somebody to travel through it. And this is one of the quests of physicists these days, is to try to master the laws of quantum physics well enough to know whether super exotic matter can exist and thereby know whether wormholes can be held open. Wormholes have now become a standard staple of television fare and Hollywood movies. You see them in the movie Contact. You see them in Star Trek and a number of other shows. These wormholes actually did arise. They came originally out of science because they are predicted by Einstein's laws of general relativity. As far as Hollywood is concerned, they exist and Hollywood depicts them. But as I say, we need to understand the laws of physics better in order to know for sure whether they are allowed.
What is your advice to someone who wants to go into astrophysics and physics, and how has the field, how has it changed within the past 20 years? What are the jobs available?
For the last 20 years, there has been a job glut, or a lack of jobs in physics and astrophysics in the United States. We have been training physicists, and they have been leaving this field after being trained. They leave this field to do wonderful other things. I trained a young man in relativity theory. He did a PhD in relativity, and he used the technical tools that he had learned and his mastery of technology and science in business, in the business world. He founded a company called Global Crossing, which went from the time of its birth to 2 years later being worth $30 billion. And it is carrying the optical fiber communications between the 50 largest cities in the world, a very large fraction of them. So training in physics is a foundation for moving in a variety of directions in technology in the business world. But because of this lack of opportunity for staying in physics, large numbers of the people that we have trained have chosen to or even been forced to move in other directions. That is ceasing to be true. The job market in the sciences fluctuates. And in physics, the need for physicists is on the verge of starting to outstrip our production of young new physicists. And so in physics and astrophysics, I see a period over the next 10 to 20 years when there will be a lot more opportunity than there has been. For people who are very talented, it doesn't matter what the job situation is. The opportunities are there just by virtue of what they're able to contribute, what they're able to do. The challenges in theoretical physics, in astrophysics, in experimental physics change fairly rapidly as technology marches forward, as we solve new problems, and the new problems open up new puzzles. And so, in fact, the problems that we are working on today are quite different from the problems we were working on when I became a physicist. When I became a physicist, the study of black holes was entirely a theoretical enterprise. Today, all the work on black holes is geared toward observational studies, either building gravitational wave telescopes or using electromagnetic waves to probe the roles of black holes in the universe. So a huge change in the nature of the research over these years, as happens in biology and any other field of science.
That was Dr. Kip Thorne, the Feynman Professor of Theoretical Physics at Caltech and author of Black Holes and Time Warps, Einstein's Outrageous Legacy.
Support for Science Questions is provided by Apogee Instruments of Cache Valley, creating innovative sensors for measuring climate change, sustainable food production, and renewable energy. More information is at apogeeinstruments.com.
This is Utah Public Radio. KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSUFM HD1, 91.5 Logan.